That's my question! The question, jerk!
Hey, listen, nerds. It's time for another Two-Headed Nerd Answer of the Week podcast with Joe and Matt.
That's right, folks. My name is Matt Baum. I'm one of the hosts of the Two-Headed Nerd comic book podcast. I host it alongside my good friend Joe Patrick. He's sitting right in front of me right now.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's the answer of the week. I don't know why. I'm so excited.
He's super excited.
Woo!
This is bizarre.
Yeah!
But he's right. It's the answer of the week, and it works like this. Every week, Joe Patrick posts the question of the week on the Two-Headed Nerd forums. You can find those at thn.forums.net. It's great. Don't go to thnforums.board.com. You'll get the hockey news.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is also cool if you want to talk about hockey. But here, we talk about comic books and nerd stuff. And every week, Joe Patrick asks you a question. And then you answer us. You can do this by emailing us an MP3 to twoheadednerd@gmail.com. You can call the Google Voice line at 402-819-4894 and leave your answer that is less than 3 minutes long. Notice I said less. The shorter, the more we like it, too. You got to share the air. But before we can get to playing all your answers, Joe Patrick, I got to know what we asked the nerds this week.
This week's question came courtesy of Tom, who is a forum user. Tom signed in as a guest.
Oh, welcome aboard,
and did
Tom.
Not create an account, so I have no idea who he is.
Come on back, Tom. My
suspicion is that it's our friend Victor Von Zoom, whose name is Tom. Oh. So I don't know. Maybe it's him. Maybe it's another Tom.
I thought his name was Victor.
No.
Okay.
This week's question, what's your favorite comic book series turnaround? As in, a book that was floundering or going through the motions story-wise, and a new creative team came in and totally breathed new life into the title.
This is kind of a tough one.
Tom's classic example is Alan Moore and Steve Bissett on Swamp Thing.
That's, yeah, wow. One of the best, certainly.
Yeah, really.
Let's get right into it. Jason Sachs, he's smarter than you, he's smarter than me, smarter than just about anybody I know. He's got an answer for us. And guys, this week, he even remembered to tell us his name.
Yeah.
Let's see what you got, Jace.
Beginning with its first issue in 1990, The Demon was written by DC Comics favorite Alan Grant and illustrated by a group of artists including Val Samix, Rich Hedden, and Tom McQueeny. It was a fine comic, a clever and silly mix of humor and horror, but 3 years into the run, the series had become a bit stale. So, with Demon number 40, cover dated October 1993, the team of Garth Ennis and John McRae took over the series. Ennis brought the same crazy feeling of euphoric weirdness to Demon they brought slightly later to Hitman, one of the great forgotten comics of the 1990s, and we knew what else he would create in the 1990s. Immediately, the Demon went from blah to brilliant, and the team's 18 issues, which ran to issue 58, created a deliriously wonderful series that desperately needs to be collected. I am Bator! Background music is Delicious Demon by Sugar Cubes, featuring Bjork, and I am Jason Sachs at Jason Sachs on Twitter.
I thought he was saying he was Bator, but...
Yeah. I thought Bator just
called
gonna
say, it. Jason, that's not your name.
You know what? Never read Ennis's Demon.
Oh, it's good.
I know it's good.
Yeah, like if you love Hitman, it's worth tracking down those back issues to read his run on the Demon. Don't bother with what came before. Just start with Ennis's run and go.
I did like Kirby's Demon.
Oh, well, sure. No, I mean, I'm talking about that run of the Demon that started in the 90s. It's really great. Once I got hooked on Hitman, I tracked down those back issues and they're really fun.
Bator was like a ridiculous demon that was like his nemesis, right?
No, Bator is a demon that like wanders out of hell.
Okay.
And ends up tending bar at Noonan's bar.
Oh, that's right.
In Hitman. And so he's just essentially a walking mouth full of weird teeth. Right? Yeah.
Okay.
Great answer, Jason. Great answer. And I agree. Those books need to be collected.
That's stupid that they're not.
It's real stupid.
It's really dumb. Thank you for your call, Jace. Always good to hear from you, buddy. Let's get to Randy Andrews.
I don't even think Hitman Volume 1 has his first appearance, which is the Demon Annual. Maybe it does.
I don't know.
Anyway.
I can't answer that.
It's criminal how it's underrepresented.
Yeah. What can you do? Let's get to Randy Andrews. If he says Gen 13, kicking him off the show forever. I'm kidding, Randy. We love you.
Greetings, Joe and Matt. This is Randy Andrews emailing in for the question of the week. This week, you had asked, What is your favorite comic book series turnaround? Well, guys, I had to think long and hard about this, but I came up with The Amazing Spider-Man. Because back in the 90s, it was being written by DeMatteis, specifically The Clone Saga. Don't we all remember that? And with that, it kept dragging on and on and on. So what would bring new life into the character? Well, throughout the entire run of the 2000s, between 2000 and maybe even clear to 2010, it went up and down, up and down, up and down. But with 2010, we got Mark Waid, and then we got Dan Slott, breathing exciting new life into our hero. I absolutely love what they've done with the character and how they've renewed his sense of fun and enjoyment for what Spider-Man can be. I've gotta say, that's my pick, guys. I hope you like it. And check out my soundtrack blog at soundtrackalley.blogspot.com. And my music this week is from Steam Boy, and it's called Ray's Theme. So I will see you guys in a week.
I'm going to guess Ray is Steam Boy.
I have no idea.
I don't know either. I don't know. That's beyond me. He loves Dan Slott on Spidey. I do too.
I like that answer. I like that answer. Spider-Man, oh, he went through a rough patch.
Yo, big time. Big time.
Rough patch.
And like after that whole Brand New Day and all that shit, where we were just, everyone was so mad about the marriage melting down and they ruined Spider-Man. And despite that, Dan Slott came in, ran with it, and you could not deny that it was great. You just couldn't deny that it was great. I wanted to be so mad at Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I wanted to throw it back in Marvel's face and say, no, you ruined everything. I think Dan Slott single-handedly saved Spider-Man.
Well, I mean, not single-handedly, because it was coming out 3 times a month, and it was rotating guys. So you had Dan Slott, but you also had Mark Waid.
That's true.
And Mark Guggenheim, and it was a little up and down, but it was definitely better.
It was definitely better.
So they walked Spider-Man back from a real bad place.
Yeah. Man,
and then terrible. But then when Dan Slott took it over as solo writer,
yeah.
Man.
Wow. And it just,
I've loved it ever since.
Yeah. Never going back. I love him.
Good answer, Randy.
I don't want anyone else to ever write Spider-Man. Good answer, Randy. Thank you for your call, buddy. Let's go to the phone lines.
I want to warn you, this is Elise calling from Lincoln, who gave us the heads up on the forums that she drunk dialed this week's call.
Oh, awesome. I love it. Drunk Elise, folks. Take it away, baby.
Hello, Internet. This is Elise Wisdom.
Hello, Internet.
I'm calling in for the answer of the week, and I've had a few adult beverages because my life is dope and I do dope. So your question is, what is your favorite turnaround? I am not going to answer that. Instead, I'm going to talk about what I'm thankful for because Thanksgiving is on Thursday.
Oh.
And it is Monday, technically Tuesday. But I'm going to talk about what I'm thankful for. Hope you guys join in and tell me what you're thankful for. Number one, I am thankful for cheap bourbon and ginger ale.
Okay.
It is delightful.
It is good.
I recommend it.
It's very good.
I am thankful for my friends because they are super awesome. I'm thankful for most of my family, not all of them, because let's face it, everybody has a family member who's a little crazy and weird and you don't want to talk to them, but that's fine. Deal with them on Thanksgiving and Christmas, and then you don't have to talk to them anymore. That's why they invented Thanksgiving and Christmas.
It's true.
You get it out of the way. Anyway, moving on. I'm thankful for my roommate, who is super awesome and lets me live in his attic. Thanks, man. You're awesome. I'm sorry my cat ruined your share. I am thankful for She-Hulk, because she taught me that you can be strong and sexy and smart, and you don't need no man. On the other hand, I am thankful for my boyfriend, because even though I don't need no man, I do like my man. Oh. He's pretty cool. All the guys at Legend call him the mythical unicorn, because they don't think he really exists.
Does he live in Canada?
I do like that, and I'm Niagara going Falls. To refer to him as the mythical unicorn from this point forward. What else am I thankful for? I didn't write a script this time. I'm just winging it. I am thankful for Legend Comics and Coffee and Two-Headed Nerd and you guys, Joe and Matt.
Aww.
Because I look forward to you guys twice a week, every week, and I love you.
Most weeks.
And you're great. I'm also thankful for Wasabi Almonds. That's it. Have a good one. Wisdom out.
At least wisdom.
She's work in the morning.
With her list of Thanksgiving things she's thankful for yep. during this Thanksgiving season. That's very sweet of her.
Elise,
Joe Patrick, in kind, I think we should answer.
We're thankful for you, Elise.
We're thankful for you. What else are you thankful for, Joe Patrick?
I'm thankful that we did not have to record a podcast last week.
I'm thankful, too. It's a crazy week. I had to play a show. I had my fifth wedding anniversary.
I'm thankful for my mom.
There it is. There it is. And I'm thankful for hockey, pugs, and ninjas. There we go.
Yeah, and Godzilla.
It's funny, my wife, we have a list of Matt's favorite things, and I always update her as to where she is on the list. And lately, she's been around 7 or 8 in the top 10 because she's been slipping because of some behavior issues that we're working on.
Yeah.
But I was like, baby. If you're not careful here, you might jump right ahead of old samurai movies. I don't know. Huh? And she's like, oh, give me a break. It's like, you're my favorite thing in the whole world, you asshole. What do you think of that? No, I'm thankful for you guys. Thankful for everybody who listens to this show. I am thankful for a kick-ass summer of fun comic book movies and the future that we have coming up. The nerd movie future looks fucking awesome.
It's going to be so good.
I'm thankful for my buddy Joe Patrick, who works very hard every week. Huh?
Yeah.
Except for the weeks where he doesn't feel like working hard and I have to pick up the slack.
Yep.
I'm thankful for local comic book shops everywhere, not just Legend Comics and Coffee. I'm thankful for your local comic book shop because they keep you guys nerding out every week. And like I said, thankful for everyone that calls into this show.
Especially you.
Especially you. You know who I'm talking to. Not you. You. There.
I think that covers it.
And as Elise just showed, you don't have to call to just answer the question. You can call and do whatever you want. Call us. Say hello.
Just be prepared for Matt to edit you if it's stupid.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or too long.
Specifically too long. Stupid generally makes it onto the show quite a bit.
Yeah, really.
Stupid is kind of right in our wheelhouse.
I think we've already proven it.
Hello, Joe and Matt. This is Anthony from Brooklyn, first-time caller.
Hey!
Calling in with the answer for the week. My favorite top-tier character making an appearance in a Fringe book. You're going to have to travel in the Wayback Machine with me. My favorite moment is in the Mark Grunewald written and penciled Hawkeye miniseries from the early 1980s. In this miniseries, Hawkeye meets Mockingbird for the first time. He, at the start of the series, is working for a technological firm as their head of security. And Mockingbird informs him that his bosses are up to no good. He finds out that she's right. And in the specific moment that I'm talking about, he's just had his ass kicked. He is penniless. They've frozen his assets. He's weaponless. And to get from point A to point B, he has to ride the subway. And this is the 1980s New York subway that was, you know, grubby and dirty, whatever. And he's sitting in full costume, he and Mockingbird. And in this moment, he's just brooding about how crappy his life is at this moment. And this guy walks up to him on the subway and is like, hey, hero, looks like you're in some trouble. And Hawkeye's thinking to himself, oh, great, some jerk is coming up to me to, you know, bug me to impress his girlfriend. He looks up and it's Steve Rogers. And Steve's like, hey, man, looks like you're in some trouble. I'll drop whatever I'm doing to help you out. And Hawkeye's like, nah, man, it's okay. I got it. No problem. And so he says, you know, good luck, soldier, and gets off the subway. And so Mockingbird sees Steve and immediately is like, oh, my God, who's that? He's gorgeous. Is he one of us? Wow, you know? And Hawkeye has just been thinking about how crappy his life is. And he's just thinking to himself, man, like, even in his civilian clothes, he's way cooler than I am. And it's just a perfect moment because it's just as bad as it could be. It just got worse. And it's just Steve Rogers showing up. And it made me laugh a lot, even as a kid when I first read it. So that's my answer. Thank you very much. Take care. Love the show.
First time caller, Tony from Brooklyn. Here's why you made the air, Tony. You're a first time caller, and I'm a big fan of Brooklyn. But you said the magic words, Mark Grunewald. I love Mark Grunewald.
Yes.
I love that Mark Grunewald Hawkeye series. I know exactly what you're talking about. That is awesome. So, even though you answered last week's question, you made it aboard.
Here's the thing about Anthony from Brooklyn. He called two more times.
Oh, he did?
The next two calls are also from Anthony from Brooklyn.
Oh, so maybe he's answering this week's question too.
I don't know. Let's see what the next
one
is.
Let's find out.
We didn't get that many callers this week. Let's just go with it.
And I love it. I love it. You know, as you can tell, we don't work very hard in this show. We leave that to you guys. So.
Second call was a technical glitch.
That's a glitch.
So, call number three. There's an actual transcript.
There's an actual transcript here. This is something.
Everything giving there is.
Happy Thanksgiving, nerds. This is Anthony from Brooklyn calling in with the answer of the week. Favorite comic book turnaround or title turnaround.
Now he's on
and
board.
We're talking about favorite title turnarounds. You're probably going to hear a name over and over again. And that name is Mark Waid. He saves Captain America. He saved Daredevil. But my personal favorite is when he and Mike Wieringo and later Howard Porter swooped in and saved Fantastic Four from mediocrity.
Yes.
During his run, you have the term Imaginauts coined, which is awesome. You have one of the best Doctor Doom stories in Unthinkable. Johnny briefly becomes a Herald of Galactus. And my personal favorite moment, Jack Kirby is God. Come on. Anyway, that's my favorite. Hope everybody has a wonderful Thanksgiving. Take care.
I am having a really hard time remembering what was going on in Fantastic Four before Mark Waid took over.
It was nothing good. That's the thing. It was completely mediocre. There was nothing to read.
Oh, was that J. Michael Straczynski's Fantastic Four?
That didn't quite end, and somebody else was filling in and stuff like that. I can't remember who it was, but his Fantastic Four kind of fizzled out.
Or did that stuff come after Mark Waid?
No, that was before.
Because Straczynski's run kind of ended and then Dwayne McDuffie did it for a while.
Yeah.
I think that came after Mark Waid.
Was it? Now we got to look. Through the magic of editing, we'll pause and look and be right back.
Regardless.
Okay, we're back. Chris Claremont was there for a little bit. Jeff Loeb was there for a little bit. Carl Kessel did some stuff. It was extremely forgettable.
Yeah, obviously, like Matt and I, who have been reading comics our entire lives, could not remember anything that happened prior to Mark Waid taking over Fantastic Four.
Because there was no reason to remember it. It was, like I said, extremely forgettable. Mark Waid jumped on and gave us what was one of my favorite Doctor Doom stories of all time. Doctor Doom finally, like, full on accepts, like, he goes full sorcery.
Embracing magic.
He goes full sorcery.
Because science wasn't doing the job.
And he makes, like, armor out of human skin.
Yeah, the skin of his ex-girlfriend.
This was the story called Unthinkable, correct?
Yes, that's where Dr. Doom kidnaps the children. He sends Franklin to hell. And, like, for several issues, Franklin is broken.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, and then he traps Reed in a... in a library full of sorcery books and no technology, and Reed is useless. And then he melts his face.
Ooh.
Oh, that's such a good story.
It was fantastic. That was an amazing turnaround. I really, really miss Mark Waid's Fantastic Four. And if he wants to come back and do it again, that would be fine with me.
Anthony, awesome answer. Welcome aboard.
Yeah, two calls. Anthony, thank you for both your calls. Nice to have you aboard, sir. Glad somebody in Brooklyn's doing something cool. It's not all just like crybaby vegans and handmade candle shops.
Is that Brooklyn?
Yeah, it's pretty hip and cool, man. Let me tell you. Mm. Back to the voicemail. Let's go back to the voicemail. I recognize this damn area code.
Oh, dang.
Never know what you're going to get.
Hello there, too, Eddie Noid. You know, not too many people know this about. Oh, by the way, I'm a first time, long time calling in, and you know, I'm somebody that is a character that I've loved for a long time. You know, a lot of my life, been on the globe for a while now, but and the character is the Flash. So with this question, you know, I try to go through all the things I've read, knowing about the Flash, and you know, there's been a lot of individual talent that has worked on his title, but they have long runs and the stories have really been consistent throughout with the Flash. You know, you go back to Carmine Infantino and Gary Bates, and I mean, you know, it's knocking it out of the park. Then you go down to Bill Lobes, knocking it out of the park. You know, then you go to Mark Wade. Can you argue with any of these things? I mean, seriously, was there ever a point where these things started to fall down? You know, these creators did great. But then, you know, after Mark Wade, he started teaming up with this other kid. I can't remember his name, Augustine or something like that. And they did partner-ups. And then you had more of these partner-ups. And it was just, the Flash story was not the same. It wasn't that Flash had the relevance. You know, he was not revered as much within his own stories. And you had these partner team-ups with these people coming on, two writers working together. I don't know why they did that. They did that for about 4 or 5 years. Two writers working. It was weird. At one point, you had Grant Morrison working on the Flash. I mean, serious? It was a good story, but you have all these different teams working together, people trying to gel, what have you. The story started to go all over the place. There was no throughput and continuity. And we're talking about the Flash. And all of a sudden, in comes this kid coming right out of Hollywood. Hollywood, yeah, I'm telling you, he was a Hollywood kid, comes out of here, you know, doing his internship in Hollywood there, and he starts writing the Flash. Oh, wow. And he puts this thing right back on the path where the Flash is revered. The Flash is the hero that others hero aspire to be. And we're talking Wally West Flash here, not Barry Allen, all right? And the writer on there and the creator along with him, it was Jeff Johns was the writer, and Scott Collins was the artist. And I tell you what, you know, they brought in some new zip to that thing. It's a Flash, and he said zip. They brought in some pop, and they did a great job. So that has to be my answer. Jeff Johns and Scott Collins on the Flash. All right? Thanks, boys. We'll talk to you next time.
He's right out of the Car Talk Garage. Boston, Mass.
That's a great answer.
That's one of the best answers. Jeff Johns, Flash. I mean, absolutely.
You can have a larger discussion about whether or not it was certainly great, but I loved Mark Wade's run as well.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well, but he said Wade's run was great. It just kind of fell off a little bit after Wade's run.
Yeah, I think you could have a discussion about that. But there was no real long run in between, just some filling guys. So,
yeah, it's true.
It's true, though. Grant Morrison and Mark Miller, a young baby-faced Mark Miller, partnered together and co-wrote The Flash for a year. Mark Wade took a break. During his 8-year-long stint, he took a break, and they did a bizarre series of stories. They're still pretty great, but they're weird.
They were really good. That was one where, like, The Flash broke his legs.
Broke his legs. Emergency right? Stop.
Yeah. Oh, man, that story was fantastic.
Yeah, but then they followed it up by doing that story where the fuzzy little electric alien that's... galactic race. I don't know.
Yeah, they fell off a little bit. They fell off a little bit. I agree with that.
I do think, though, that Grant Morrison created the Black Flash, which was something that stuck around in the Flash comic for several years, like the embodiment of speedster death.
One call left. This was a tough question. I understand. It was also a holiday weekend, so I get it. You guys are busy, but we can do better. We can always do better. Shonix, hit me, baby.
Hello, Twitter nerd. Shonix emailing in with my answer to the question of the week. Missed last week. Probably going to miss this week. But we'll see. I might make it in on time. Tough question. I really had a hard time thinking about it because there's not a lot of books that I've read that were floundering. And then, you know, a lot of times I just dropped them. But there was one book in particular that I just continue to buy just because I bought it. It was my first book, and that was Uncanny X-Men. And someone's probably already mentioned it. I mean, because it's really unfair to Chris Claremont because he came on right after Chuck Austin in that run of Uncanny that really had me second-guessing buying it month to month. But
you stuck through
it
that?
It was really then when Brubaker took reins of the title and kind of set the stage for Fraction and then Gillian. But I'd have to say Brubaker really, because Claremont stuff was all right. There was that weird Savage Land stuff, and it kind of set some other things up. And you had the first issue we had was that baseball issue, so that was good. It was a callback, but I think it was a little too I don't know. But, yeah, that would have to be my answer. It would be Chris Claremont and I believe it was Alan Davis taking over the reins from Chuck Austin. And I can't think of that weird. There were so many different artists on that book. So, yeah, that would have to be it. Yeah. Chuck Austin. Peace out.
To be fair, and I'm not trying to downplay your answer. I like your answer. But to be fair, anybody that comes on after Chuck Austin is going to be better. You know, like that was such a low point for the X-Men. It was so bad. So bad. We got all this secondary mutation bullshit. Where like all of a sudden Angel may or may not have been a real angel.
And no, he came from a race of angel mutants.
And his blood heals
just like there
people.
Was a race of werewolf mutants.
Oh God. And Nightcrawler was from a race of demon mutants. And oh my God, it was so bad.
So he's talking about Chris Claremont returning to the X-Men.
Yes.
After years away.
I can't say I totally agree.
I can't say I totally agree either.
I didn't love that. I will say when Ed Brubaker came on, very excited. But then we spent a little too much time in outer space.
The yeah.
The whole Vulcan saga and everything. And
the life and death of the Shi'ar Empire.
Something
whatever.
Like that. I really didn't need another Summers brother. I really didn't need another story where Professor X turns out to be a shithead that murdered a bunch of students. I liked Ed Brubaker coming on to the Uncanny X-Men a lot because it breathed some fresh life into the characters. Like Warpath was back and stuff like that. I love that character. I don't think he gets used enough, but it kind of fell off a little bit. I can't say that I loved Claremont's return. That's not to say that I disagree with you. It was a breath of fresh air and we needed it. But it wasn't my favorite. I'll say that.
But you know what? If you're going to have somebody come back and save the X-Men from what had been done to it,
you could do much worse than Chris Claremont.
At least it was the guy that pretty much invented the modern X-Men as we know them.
Right, right.
So I'm with you, Sean. That's a good answer. Even if we don't completely agree, God bless him for doing it.
God bless him. God bless you, Chris Claremont. Favorite call?
I don't suppose you wrote down.
Nope.
Who they were.
Shit. Certainly forgot.
You know what? My favorite call is Elise.
Mine is too. My favorite call goes to drunk Elise Wisdom.
For just
feeling her feelings.
For just saying, hey, let's take a break and say what we're thankful
feeling
for.
Feeling her cute little drunk feelings.
Yeah.
It was adorable.
He was. Though I also really loved Anthony from Brooklyn's Mark Waid answer.
Solid answer.
Whoa, doctor.
I really liked the Jeff Johns answer for The Flash.
Yeah.
First time, long time. That was a great answer, too.
Yep.
Dig that one. Jason Sachs gave me something that I have to investigate. I forgot. I totally forgot that Garth Ennis ever wrote The Demon.
Oh, it's awesome. Oh,
I know.
Yeah. Jason Sachs, I think, was going to be my favorite call. But Anthony won me over with that Mark Waid. That Mark Waid.
Great f***ing answer.
I'd really like to reread that run.
Let's get to your answer.
All right. I've got an answer.
Okay.
And it's one of many that I love.
Okay.
Like creative teams coming in and kicking the doors off the place.
Okay.
But I will say one of my favorite creative runs in comics and something that was so welcome at the time compared to what had come before has to be Kurt Busiek and George Perez coming on to the Avengers in the wake of Heroes Reborn.
Okay.
Because let me paint a picture for you. In the 90s.
This is pretty sad.
In the 90s, the Avengers line was not in a great place. Forgettable storylines. Bob Harris.
Yeah.
Was writing the book for a long time. He was in charge of a lot of stuff, churning out completely forgettable nonsense.
And it's funny, back then it seemed like Marvel was kind of aping what was going on at DC a bit. Like DC hardened up some of their heroes and everything, like killed Superman and whatever. And Marvel went, we got to do that too. We're going to put spikes on Thor's shoulders.
They killed off Tony. They made him a villain, killed off Tony, turned him into a teenager, all sorts of bull. The Avengers, which you could argue should be Marvel's like premier team, right?
Right.
Like they're a number one. This is where you go for things that are awesome.
Where they are Avengers. Now.
It was not that in the 90s.
Floundering.
And so Marvel made a deal with some, at the time, fan favorite creators that had left Marvel to create a little company you may have heard of called Image Comics.
No recollection of this whatsoever.
Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld were hired to come back to Marvel and quote unquote revitalize four of their key franchises, the Avengers, Fantastic Four,
Iron Man,
and Captain America.
Yes.
Jim Lee was in charge of Fantastic Four and Avengers. Rob Liefeld was in charge of Iron Man and Captain America.
Silvestri did Iron Man, didn't he?
No, Will Spertaccio did
Iron Man. That's right.
Oh, for a second. Yeah. And then it was taken over by some clone. Rob Liefeld drew Captain America, creating what is probably the most infamous, well-known example of bad anatomy ever to appear in comics.
Until Milo Manara drew Spider-Woman.
The Avengers book was just mediocre on every single level. And if you loved Image Comics in the 90s, then boy, these were the books for you. Critical darlings, they were not. And this was at the time where people were starting to want more substance in their comics. The early 90s were over. People were starting to wake up and snap out of it. And this was like right before this happened, Mark Waid and Ron Garney came on to Captain America, and it was taken away from them to do this Heroes Reborn bullshit.
That was like Man Without a Country and stuff like that. Yes, Man Without a Country. So good.
And so Heroes Reborn lasted a year. I'm sure it got a lot of attention. But when the books came back, when they brought the Marvel characters back into the Marvel universe, they said, Mark Waid, we're sorry. Take Captain America back and fix it, please. Kurt Busiek relaunched Iron Man with Sean Chen. Scott Lobdell and Alan...
Sean Chen is who I was thinking of. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I love Sean Chen.
I love him.
Yeah. He created what is probably my favorite Iron Man suit, where they went back to the little crown points.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I love that suit.
Yeah.
Scott Lobdell and Alan Davis relaunched Fantastic Four to mixed reviews. Yeah. But Kurt Busiek and George Perez took the Avengers from wallowing in the mud and elevated them to the premier team that they need to be all the time. And they just...
They did it the old-fashioned way, too. It was very 80s Avengers.
Yeah, like they reformed the team. Like they had been away, things were broken, and they were rebuilding the team basically from scratch.
Right.
And so in the first three or four issues, you've got every Avenger that had ever been an Avenger appearing. And so the mystery is like, well, who's going to be in the final team? Who's going to be the new Avengers? Is it going to be Rage and Stingray and Hercules? No. Gilgamesh? No. And they just kicked ass, man. And they had like a 3-year run that is amazing.
It was really good.
Wonderful stuff.
Yeah. That's a great answer. I'm going to go to a DC comic.
Oh, do it.
I'm doing it. And at the time, I had read this guy before. He had been around. He wasn't a new creator by any stretch. And I talk about him a lot. I admit that. But I was reading Green Arrow because I love that character. Absolutely love that character. And for a long time in the 80s, this would have been mid to late 80s, Green Arrow was unreadable. It was, they had no idea what they were doing with the character. It just got lost with all these dumb villains. They didn't have an identity for him whatsoever. And so to sort of infuse some excitement into the book, DC decided we're going to bring Chuck Dixon onto Green Arrow and we're going to kill Oliver Queen. And I was young, and this was before the internet. I didn't know it was coming. There was just a new guy writing Green Arrow. I liked the art. I liked that he was the Emerald Archer, whatever I'm reading. 3 issues into his run, Chuck Dixon kills Oliver Queen. And I was so mad. I was so angry. But I had to see what happened next, and they introduced Oliver Queen's son, Connor Hawke. Brand new character. This was right about the time Kyle Rayner became Green Lantern as well. We were introducing all these new characters in the DCU that were taking the old legacy names and running with them. And everyone was pissed. Everyone was so mad. I instantly fell in love with Connor Hawke. And I think the first story that hit me, Rodolfo DiMaggio was doing the art.
I love Rodolfo DiMaggio.
I do too.
And where'd that guy go?
I don't know. He fell off. He totally disappeared. And it was when we see...
He was like a phenomenon that book. When he came out, he got a lot of attention for that
because
work.
Green Arrow all of a sudden turned into this martial arts book. Connor Hawke was like raised in a Buddhist monastery, and he was a badass kung fu dude and totally kick ass with a bow and arrow, but he was a pacifist. You know, like he was this conundrum. He wanted to fight crime and follow what his dad was doing, but he wanted to do it the right way and try and teach people and save people. And he teamed up with Kyle Rayner for the first time. It was a story called Bad Blood. And I loved every issue of Chuck Dixon's Green Arrow run. He remade, well, not first, breathed life into Oliver Queen, which he desperately needed, killed him, and then invented a whole new Green Arrow in his son and made me fall in love with that character, a character that I do not think we will ever see again. It's just gone, you know, and it's like if you wanted to redo the new 52, reintroduce us to Connor as like this younger Green Arrow, whatever, and maybe Ollie is around to guide him or something, maybe that could have been okay. But instead, they just de-aged him and whatever. Who gives a shit? I love Chuck Dixon's Green Arrow so much. And there was a few different artists that worked on him. I believe Eduardo Barreto was on there, too. Now deceased, Eduardo Barreto.
Eduardo Barreto did pass away. Yeah.
And he was so good on there. It just became the street level martial arts comic. They reinvented the idea of Green Arrow, and I f-ing loved it, man. So good. That's my answer. Chuck Dixon.
I love that answer. And I did not read that entire run of Green Arrow, but I did read a few here and there when it crossed over with other books I was reading, like Green Lantern and The Flash, because they kind of formed this friendship between Connor and Kyle and Wally West.
Yeah, big time.
And man, that was a great time for like legacy characters.
Absolutely. And they went into the fact that he was this amazing.
Tim Drake's Robin was getting going.
Like Connor Hawke became this amazing martial arts character. And there was a story called The Paper Monkey where all these different martial artists came to challenge the world's greatest martial artist. And Bruce Wayne thought it was him. And it turns out it wasn't. It was Connor.
So
cool. Totally great.
Turn around. Every now and then I get a little bit lonely and you're never coming around.
This is a super fun question. Kind of a deep one for the old guys. I feel like we learned a lot about you. We learned that first time, long time is older than we thought. He was citing like way old 80s Flash stuff. Went, okay, I got an idea how old you are, buddy.
Post-crisis Flash stuff is not that old.
It is that old. We are wretchedly old,
Bill,
Ben Joe
Bill
Patrick.
Lobes.
Anthony, welcome aboard. Nice to have you, buddy. Expect to hear from you again.
Oh, yeah.
We will have a new question of the week posted by the time you hear this, Joe Patrick.
It's posted already. I've just done it.
Tell them what it is.
This week's question comes courtesy of Black Scorpion III, prolific.
I'll tell you
what. That dude suggests a lot of questions.
Knocking him out of the park. Going yard with the question of the week.
Which resurrected comic book character do you think should have stayed dead?
This is going to get ugly.
Simple, to the point, and everyone has an opinion.
That's right.
Everyone's got an answer.
Call in and yell about this one.
You've got until Friday, December 5th, 5 o'clock p.m. Central Time to get us your answer. You can do it all sorts of different ways. The lady at the end is going to tell you how. Get on the phones. Get to your emails. Record your MP3s. Make it happen.
Thanks again so much for everybody's call. This is your guys' show, and the only reason it's good is because you work so hard on it, because Joe Patrick and I barely work on this.
I don't do
We'll have another episode of the Two-Headed Nerd Comic Book Podcast this weekend, but until then, go to twoheadednerd.com, check out all the new fun stuff there, and if you have an idea of a blog you would like to write for twoheadednerd.com, we would love to hear from you, but we're not going to pay you. That's just how it works. Sorry. We are.
No.
For now, this is the Two-Headed Nerd, signing off.
Once upon a time, there was light in my life, but now there's only love in the dark.